Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Pitch to Palace by Avon Ellis, narrated by Andrea Ems. Chapter 1. The Fairy Tale. The state apartments at Windsor Castle are awash with the sounds of conversation and laughter. I stand back in the corner of the grand reception room, surveying the sea of hats and fascinators and men in morning suits, celebrating under the glittering chandeliers and surrounded by gold, both on the walls and ceilings. The household staff of Windsor Castle are swiftly moving amongst the crowd, offering champagne and finger foods, and even an assortment of items that are eaten out of bowls. There are flowers everywhere, lush greens with white roses and hydrangeas. The mood is one of celebration, and smiles light up the room nearly as much as all of the gold does. I find myself smiling, too. The festive feeling is exactly what should be filling the hallowed halls of Windsor Castle this afternoon. After all, it's not every day you get to celebrate a royal wedding. I see Clementine and Christian greeting guests, looking cheerful and in love at the other end of the room. I'm thrilled for my cousin Christian. For so long he walled himself off from love and hid away from the world at Cambridge, a feeling I understand completely, as I have done the same at Oxford. But Clementine came into Christian's world and turned it upside down. She filled it with love and laughter and an excitement for life that has been missing for him. She is his person, and he is hers. Theirs is a marriage of deep love, passion, and friendship. There is a tangible spark between them, one I see when their eyes meet, in the way they speak to each other, how his hand finds her hair, or she touches his face. The prince found his princess, and now they'll live happily ever after. A living fairy tale, I think, as I watch them. However, no man is coming to turn my snow globe upside down and set the glitter free like what happened for Christian. I will forever be Bella York, the forgettable middle sister between two radiant, confident princesses that the world wants to know. I thought I might have met that man last month. And that man, the one I stupidly thought might have shown a glimmer of interest in me merely because we had a fun conversation, is somewhere here at this reception. The man I thought was the perfect one to perhaps bring some glitter to my life turned out to be interested in my magnetic, fashion-forward sister Victoria. While that didn't work out, one date and there was no chemistry, I realized how stupid I was to think that Camden Tremblay, a sexy, famous tattooed Canadian footballer, would be interested in me for anything more than a time-killing conversation. As I remember that night, I practically want to hide behind the rich red drapery that is behind me. I cringe, as I have at least a million times since that night happened. So make that 1,000,001 embarrassing floor swallow me up cringes. I wrinkle my nose. For once, I wish I didn't have a brain that can recall, in vivid fine-point detail, every stupid thing I have ever done in my life, and replay it like a favorite film stored on demand. But now that my brain is rolling, it goes right back to the conversation that I shared with Camden in Christian's kitchen at Ivy Cottage, in woeful, painstaking detail, word by word, to its epic, grand, humiliating end. Ugh. Now that I'm here, I analyze it again, like I would in attacking an essay I'm writing, laying out all the evidence and studying it critically. How could I have thought Camden, a forward for Stonebridge United, would engage with me for anything other than a nice chat? That Camden, who is usually seen coming out of London's most fashionable nightclubs with tall, leggy, reed-thin models, would possibly be interested in a curvy, shy, medieval-loving scholar from Oxford. Answer? I obviously lost my mind. One look at that devilishly handsome man with dark brown hair and blue eyes, and my brain cells exploded and died inside my head. Well, I have them back, I think firmly. I know how to handle it now. I just need to hide from him during this reception and at the dinner and after-party at Frogmore House tonight. Easy. As long as there are several hundred people around and a good corner I can blend into, I can do this. I pause. There will be 200 people at dinner tonight, and unlike the stand-up reception now, That will have organized seating. Clementine would never put me next to him. As things ended badly with Victoria, maybe that would be a good repellent anyway. If I bump into Camden, I'll say hi, manager. Wasn't the weather lovely for the wedding today? And watch him flirt like mad with some gorgeous single girl, and that will be that. But for now, so I can prolong that embarrassment, I'm going to hide. And I excel at hiding. My eyes sweep the room again. With more than 700 guests, the reception is spread out amongst three rooms: the Grand Reception Room, the Waterloo Room, and St. George's Hall. St. George's Hall is my favorite room in the entire castle. I love to venture into it alone when there are no public tours and stare up at the magnificent hammer beam roof, decorated with all of the coat of arms for every knight of the Garter, going back to 1348. It's a feast of history for my eyes, and I never tire at looking at it. So why am I not trying to blend into the walls there? Because Camden has an interest in knights. If there's one room in the place he'd be interested in, that would be it. My gut tells me that is where he'll be. My stupid heart flutters. A gorgeous, sexy man who knows about knights? No wonder I shut my brain off from reality when I spoke with him. "There you are," a familiar voice says to me. I blink. I was so wrapped up in my thoughts that I didn't even hear Poppy Davies, my cousin Xander's girlfriend, approach me. I smile. Poppy has become my best friend, and I'm so glad to see her amongst this sea of people right now. "Is this where you have been hiding? It's like I lost you the second we arrived," she says, studying me with her intuitive brown eyes. "You tell me you need to visit the loo, and like Cinderella, you disappear. Except you didn't even wait for the clock to strike 12. You were at the reception for 5 minutes before running off." I feel my cheeks warm. "No, I ran into some friends of the family and chatted for a bit. Then I was just enjoying some people watching." I lie. Her lips twist in thought. "Are you sure that's all you're doing?" "Yes, of course," I say, drawing up a second mark in my mental lie column. She smiles. "Good, because Xander wants to see you. Come on." Oh no, Xander is friends with Camden. They are partners on a charity initiative, so he might very well be with him at this moment. I'll find him in a few minutes," I say. That sounds stupid even to me. "Bella, I won't let you hide in this corner. Your hiding days are over. Did you see how many men were staring at you when we walked in? Heat color on cheeks? Gas mark 5 in oven terms." "No, they were looking at you," I insist. "Or if they were looking at me, they were looking at my boobs," I add to myself. I was blessed and cursed with full ones, and they often get spoken to first when men talk to me. Except for Camden, he looked me in the eyes when we talked, and his gaze never strayed. Duh, that's because he wasn't interested. Now I really want to slip behind this drapery until the reception is over. "Bella," Poppy says firmly, "I don't want you to look back at this reception and wish you had experienced it for yourself. I don't want you to watch everyone celebrating. I want you to celebrate with me, with us. Christian and Clementine deserve that from you, and so does the rest of the squad. We want to share this moment together, and by God, if I have to drag the entire group over to this corner to do it, I will." To my surprise, gratefulness sweeps past the feeling of guilt I'd normally have when people accuse me of hiding, because I know Poppy genuinely wants me to celebrate with her, not as a member of her future family, but as her friend. I see how much she cares about me, for her to hunt me down, and I actually get emotional about it. I draw a breath of air. Poppy reaches for my hand and squeeze it. "You can do this," she says gently. "I'm going to be there with you. Don't worry about Camden. He's the one who should be embarrassed, not you." My mouth drops open. Before I can say a word, Poppy beats me to it. "I know that's why you are hiding," she says. "And you have no reason to. You will see him, greet him, then move on. I promise you, he has no idea what you are thinking or feeling, so there's nothing to be embarrassed about. He is oblivious, the man that he is, and for once we'll be grateful that he's stupid. I smile. Camden is not stupid, but I'll grant you oblivious. Poppy grins. Well, he was stupid for not asking you out, but I'll ignore that for now and settle on oblivious. Then she leans closer so she can whisper in my ear. And I insist you come join us in St. George's Hall. Her Majesty is trapped in a conversation with Clementine's parents, and her Botox can't hold up to the strain of looking engaged with such a bourgeoisie family. I nearly choke with laughter. My aunt, Queen Antonia, loathes Clementine's American family. I know it's killing her to have to not only be pictured with them, but to actually have to speak to them too. That might be worth it, I concede. Let's get you a glass of champagne, and we'll toast Her Majesty's exceptional behavior today. I arch an eyebrow at her. I have to say, your revolt against her has had marvelous results. Poppy smiles. Sometimes you merely need an outsider to shake things up. Camden flashes through my head again, but I quickly change the channel on that mental TV in my brain. Poppy ushers me from the safety of the drapes, and we walk through the crowd. She pauses by a waiter carrying a silver tray filled with champagne flutes and plucks two of them, handing one to me. I already know it's Paul Roger, as that is the champagne always served at our family celebrations. And I take my sip none too soon, as Poppy is indeed leading me towards St. George's Hall. Xander is with Arthur and James, she says, reading my mind. I take another sip. Right. And you look beautiful, Poppy says. So many guys are checking you out. I wish you would notice that, and perhaps put a sway in your hips. I nearly spit out my champagne. What? Poppy bursts out laughing. That never hurt any girl, trust me. Considering she will marry the most eligible bachelor in the world, according to Dishing Weekly, that is, maybe there is something to this hip thing. But the fact that my hips are very curvy, is that a bonus? Or too much. And yours are swayworthy, my dear, Poppy adds. How do you know what I'm thinking? I cry. Poppy smiles. Because you're one of my best friends. I know you. Love for Poppy brims over in me. I'm so lucky to have her as my best friend. We reach St. George's Hall, and for the first time, I don't bask in its magnificence, but search the room for Camden. Of course, there are hundreds of people in this room, so it's not like I could find him even if I wanted to. Which I don't. I absolutely do not want to see him, and I definitely don't want to see him in his mourning suit, because then all my stupid thoughts would be back, and humiliation will consume me for the rest of the reception.
You found her,
Xander cries cheerfully as we approach. I told you I'd know where to look, Poppy says triumphantly. If you say the library, I will smack you, I say to Xander. He arches an eyebrow.
Bella in the Royal Library, buried in rare works? No, it never came to my mind at all.
Oh, shut up, Xander, I say, but I smile as I do.
I love that space myself. I can see the appeal,
Arthur says, smiling at me.
But I think we'd all rather have you here drinking champagne than studying this afternoon.
My heart warms. Oh, how I love my Uncle Arthur. It's good to see him here, doing so well after his heart attack last month. Thank you, I say to him.
You look lovely, Arthur says. Green suits you.
I blush. I'm not used to this much attention. Thank you.
I might need to stay by your side,
Sanders says, taking a sip of his cocktail.
I don't want any of these guys making untoward advances on my cousin. I'm sure Bella would love that,
James quips.
What's next? Assigning her a chaperone? James, that's a brilliant idea,
Xander teases. Oh no, put your alpha male on the shelf and let Bella have fun, Poppy says, giving Xander a knowing look. I nearly laugh. Oh, Xander is directing his protectiveness the wrong way. He needs to go keep the men away from Victoria. If he were to put himself in charge of keeping the men away from me all night, he'd be bored out of his mind from lack of action. Have you eaten? Poppy asks. The bowls are amazing. No. Which one did you have? I ask.
The lamb bowl with mint was delicious,
Poppy says. She turns to Xander and smiles. So good, Xander had two. He places his hand on Poppy's back.
I won't deny it.
Really? I need to find those,
James says.
You must be starving. I've only seen you devour every starter that has crossed your path.
Arthur teases. James's brown eyes sparkle mischievously.
It's an incredible perk of being 22 and having a high metabolism. I'll be back.
I watch as James walks away, thinking that he did score the genetic metabolism lottery. I was so cheated on that, I think with a grin. Not only can James consume vast amounts of food and maintain his weight, he's really grown into a handsome man. Now that Xander and Christian are taken, he has vaulted to the top of the eligible bachelor's list in the UK. In fact, in our group text chats, he takes loads of teasing for it too. I think about this for a moment. James is like a blend of Xander and Christian, personality-wise. He's enjoying women right now. Nothing crazy like Xander was in his philandering days, but not a hermit like Christian was either. James, with his thick dark brown hair and brown eyes, is going to have his hands full fighting off women around the world. And when he attends RAF College Cranwell and pictures are released of him in uniform, well, we'll have to hire security for him just to keep the women away.
Your mother was distraught over the bulls,
Arthur says to Xander, interrupting my thoughts about James. Then he smiles, and a wicked gleam enters his pale blue eyes.
Pity.
I have to bite my tongue to keep from giggling. Since his heart attack, there's a difference in Arthur, a lightness that was missing before. Perhaps it is true. Sometimes we have to go through challenges and adversity to become a better version of ourselves. Xander, however, doesn't hold back his laughter.
I offered Mother a Thai steak bowl. She looked like she wanted to throw it at my head. But as I was standing next to the wall, and it would be a pain in the ass to get the chili sauce off the coat of arms, she managed to withhold that urge in case she missed a target.
Now we're all dying. Arthur clears his throat.
On that note, I'm going to find Christian and Clementine and go back to my apartment. I want to rest before we go to Frogmore House this evening.
Xander nods.
I'll keep an eye on things down here.
Arthur claps his hand on Xander's shoulder.
I know you will.
My heart warms at the unspoken look of affection between them. Xander and Arthur have grown closer since his heart attack, and I'm so happy to see the family coming together like this after a crisis. Where some families might be torn apart, we are stronger than ever. There is no crisis that could tear this family apart, I think. I'm as sure of that as I am sure I'm standing in Windsor Castle. And for that, I will always be grateful. Arthur turns to Poppy and me.
I'll see you both this evening.
We say goodbye, and I excuse myself to find a food bowl, as the lamb one did sound delicious. I get rid of my champagne glass, as stand-up dining isn't convenient for juggling both. Relief fills me. This is better. I can get something to eat and go back to the safety of Xander and Poppy, which makes me feel a little more secure in doing more than chugging champagne or looking nervously around the room for he who shall not be named. It will be easier to banish thoughts of him. I grow annoyed with myself. Good God, I'm such a fool. I spoke to him once, so that gives my brain a license to have a full-blown crush on the man a month after he went out with my sister. I'm saddened that my answer to that is obviously yes. Okay, enough. I need to focus on finding food, not thinking of him. A waitress sweeps in front of me with another platter, this time filled with bowls. Pardon me, I say, but what are these?
They are filled Yorkshire pudding bowls, mum,
the woman replies, lowering the tray. Oh, my, I love Yorkshire puddings. They're the ultimate comfort food. I'll take one, I say, lifting the bowl from the tray. Thank you.
I'd say that is an excellent choice, Your Royal Highness,
a voice says from behind. I freeze. I hold the bowl in midair, my heart ricocheting around my ribs with furious speed. I know that voice. I slowly will myself to turn around.
Everything in my stomach flips upside down with anxiety as I do. And now, I find myself face to face with Camden Tremblay. Camden, with his gorgeous dark brown hair and blue eyes, is oh so hot as hell in a grey wool morning coat and trousers, lighter grey double-breasted waistcoat, crisp white dress shirt, dark grey silk tie, and white pocket square. My God, he's the most beautiful man I've ever seen. Hello, I manage to squeak. My hands get shaky, so I gather up all the powers of concentration I have to ensure the bowl doesn't end up on the floor between us. This is not going to be easy. Camden bows to me. His eyes immediately shift to my face, not skimming down and landing on my breasts like so many other men do.
You look absolutely beautiful today,
he says softly. New oven gas mark face blush reading? 9. But then I remember he's not attracted to me, so it's the same as Arthur saying it. Current gas mark reading with that realization? Off. Thank you, I manage to say.
It's good to see you again,
Camden says. I furrow my brow. He's not charming and flirty like he was the last time I spoke with him. There's a seriousness about him. Oh no, did Xander say something to him? That I thought he was interested and now he's being ultra-cautious with what he says. Forget the library. I want to lock myself away in the dungeon until this night is over. Nobody would be the wiser for it. I can do it too. It's a perk of having access to castles. Thank you, I say again hesitantly. I really should be.
I was looking for you,
he cuts in. What? I ask, furrowing my brow.
I was hoping I could talk to you,
Camden says, pausing and taking a sip of his champagne. He faces me, runs a hand through those deep chocolate brown locks, and exhales.
Please.
If my heart was ricocheting before, it's damn near exploded now. Okay, I say. He inclines his head toward my bowl.
Why don't we stay here and you can eat first? And then maybe we can go somewhere a little more private?
I furrow my brow. Why? He furrows his back.
Because I'd like to speak to you alone. I have something I want to say to you.
Ding. A light bulb goes off in my head. I take a bite of my Yorkshire pud because now Camden's motivation has come into focus, and I might as well enjoy something out of this torture. I don't know where Victoria is, I say. Damn it, now he's ruined Yorkshire pudding for me. It tastes like nothing in his presence.
What? Victoria? Why do you think I want to talk about Victoria?
For a moment, I almost believe the confused expression on his handsome face, but I know better. It's okay, I'm used to it. Before I would say Liz or Victoria, but now that Liz is engaged, when guys want to talk to me, it's always for info or a potential fix with Victoria. I assume you want to see if there could be something between you two if you tried another date. You want to ask me how she would feel about that. Camden closes his eyes. Then he opens them, and those blue eyes are once again locked on mine.
I'm not interested in discussing Victoria.
I pause mid-bite.
I want to talk to you,
he says, sounding a bit agitated.
Will you let me do that? We can start here, in this hall, and if you're okay with it, once you're done eating, maybe we can take a walk around the grounds or something, or pick a different room here. There has to be like 1,000 of them. But don't mistake my intention. I want to talk to you.
1,000,000 butterflies take off in my stomach. I know it's foolish to believe there could be a romantic reason for him wanting to talk to me, but I want this moment. This moment of hope and anticipation and excitement. I want the glitter, even if I know it will settle and die around me at the end. Okay, I say, picking up my fork and taking a bite.
Really?
He asks, eyeing me skeptically.
You aren't going to take off like Cinderella and make me run through the castle trying to find you.
My heart stops. He made a Cinderella reference, just like Poppy did before I entered this room. Look at these heels. I can't run anywhere, I say. He glances down at my shoes, but this time, his gaze slowly sweeps up over me, causing goosebumps to prickle my arms. Finally, his eyes return to mine again.
I'm grateful for your choice of footwear, then.
Before my brain can start to sort out a logical reason for his comment, Camden interrupts me.
This is the first time I've been in a castle,
he says.
This room is amazing.
I knew you'd like this room, I reply, taking another bite. The armor.
There's that, but also the coat of arms on the ceiling,
he says, tilting his head upwards.
That's so cool.
Do you see the plain white ones? I ask, glancing up with him.
Yeah, what do those mean?
Those are knights who have acted dishonorably and were removed from the Order of the Garter, I explain. 36 of them have been beheaded. I feel Camden's gaze on my profile.
Your family doesn't screw around, does it?
I chuckle and meet his gaze. Nope. Henry VIII was responsible for 6 of those.
Is it true he's buried in the choir?
Camden asks.
I overheard people talking about that before the ceremony began.
I nod. Clementine walked right over him on her way to Christian. Camden makes a face. I laugh. Yes, I agree. It's kind of creepy, I say.
Well, I have high hopes their marriage will turn out better than most of his did.
Camden teases. He looks around the vast hall again.
I can't get over the size of this hall, or the artifacts in this room. No wonder you became fascinated with medieval studies. You can live with them.
A waiter collecting empty bowls walks by, and I place mine on the tray and thank him. I turn back to Camden, thinking about my answer before I say it. But then I decide to be honest. This isn't going anywhere anyway, so I might as well be authentic. I definitely think my lineage plays a huge part in my fascination. Yet nobody else in the family, besides my dad, is a student of history like I am. I can't help it. I walk these halls and enter these rooms and think of all that has happened before me. How things that took place in this very room impacted the future of the UK. I like all kinds of history, but the medieval period has always been my favorite. It's the foundation of Western civilization. It's important to understand it. There. I'm a history girl who can talk about a suit of armor and how today's government has roots in the Middle Ages. Every man's fantasy, I'm sure. I think Riley.
And things that happen in this very room can still affect the future, too.
Camden says slowly. Well, this is history right now. A royal wedding reception, I say, gesturing around the room with my hand. The first marriage of a member of the House of Chadwick to an American. That will be in the history books for sure. Camden shakes his head.
That's so crazy that Clementine being an American is a big deal.
I know. So much of the tradition is outdated on so many levels. My dad claims that is part of the mystique which keeps us different and people intrigued. But other people, like Xander and Liz, want to make us more relatable, normal, so to speak.
And what do you think about that?
I blink. Nobody has ever asked me what I think in regard to my family before.
Why are you surprised I'm asking you that question?
What? I'm stunned. How did you know I was thinking that?
I don't know,
Camden says, staring into my eyes.
I just did.
A moment passes between us. My breath catches in my throat. I don't know what it is, but it's different. There's an electricity in the air, a pull that is leading me to him, and I'm powerless to draw away. I think it has to be a mixture of both, to be honest, I say. We have to have the castles and the palaces and the magical events, like trooping the colour and state dinners. That is the magic that people want to behold. It's the show they've come to see. We play our parts, and then we can do the work that matters, like what Christian does with his work for caregivers and Liz's championing of programs for early childhood development.
And why haven't you been a star in this show?
I feel flustered inside. How has he even noticed that? What do you mean? Camden's stare is unwavering.
You never appear in public, outside of walking to church on Easter or Christmas or an event like this. Why is that? Don't tell me it's because you're a student. That's some of it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?